This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits. Enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform, Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 398, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Where do you go with your broken heart and soul? And what do you do with the leftover you? And how do you know when to let go? Where does the good go? Where does the good go?
Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 398. My name is Paul Montgomery. Joining me, the returning Connor Kilpatrick.
I'm back, baby.
Don't ever do that. Joshua Flanagan.
He's back, baby.
All right. At iFanboy.com, we like comics and we read comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics, and one of us picks the best book and writes about it on the website, and then we talk about it on this here podcast along with various other topics of interest. Before we get to the show, quick reminder slash warning, this is a review show, and we'll be talking about some of the things that went on in these books, and we're going to ruin them for you, and we're going to just put your face right in there.
Shove it right in.
Just shove it right in there, and
you
this
like
is
that?
What's happening.
You like those spoilers?
You like it?
You eat those spoilers!
It's a spoiler swirly we're going to do to you. This week, Joshua had the pick.
A plot point wedgie.
So we're going to talk about Trillium, right?
You wish, masses. You wish. My pick of the week was Quantum and Woody number 2. out of the good folks at Valiant Comics, who have sponsored
Valiant Entertainment, actually.
Yeah. You know what? They've sponsored some of this show. That had nothing to do with this. There it is. You don't believe me? Fine. So there's been lots and lots of Valiant books. There's been lots of chatter about them. There's been lots of talent on them. And none have become the pick of the week yet, I think. And there are certain among you who think that's odd because you've really been enjoying these books. And I've read some of them, but most of them haven't grabbed me. I'll be honest about that. They're fine books, but I didn't know much. I don't know anything about Quantum and Woody, honestly. I've never read the thing that came before it. But what grabbed me when I saw that this book was coming out was that Tom Fowler, who is a favorite artist of mine, is going to be the regular artist on this book, and that's something I was really excited to see. And,
sold.
Yeah, exactly. And he's an automatic buy. And James Asmus was writing it. Now I was never terribly impressed with. You know, I'd read some of the stuff he'd done. I was like, well, we'll see what happens. And I got to say that he came on and he really stepped up to do what is kind of a fun, wacky book. And it's which really fits in. I think him and Tom are working really well together to create a slightly different kind of comic book than we're seeing, but still with, you know, the sort of all the mainstream stuff about it. But the story here is basically that there's all these sort of expectation reversals going on, where you've got these two brothers. One of them is adopted. One is white. One is black. The white one was adopted into the black family, and he is the black sheep. You can see how we're going with this already. And there's all sorts of little subtle ways to sort of play with your expectations and you know, the ideas that you have about race and stereotypes and things like that. And it's fairly lighthearted, so they can get away with it. Anyway, the story is that the dad is this super duper scientist, and the brothers kind of hate each other in the way that brothers do. And the dad dies, and they both get caught up in this huge, ever-expanding wackiness where they end up in, like, a science explosion and get powers, and they don't know what's going on. And as this issue starts, you know, they're surrounded by the police. They're both naked for most of the issue. So just on in terms of the mechanics of having to cover up their goodies, the art team did a fine job of making sure we couldn't see their junk. But as it goes on, like, they're just constantly fighting with each other. And there's little flashbacks that go back to sort of their childhood that make them who they are. And you just, I mean, you know that they're in superhero costumes on the front. But so they've got to build all that stuff. And then we get to the end bit, and we've got I guess they're sort of villains. There's Johnny 1 and Johnny 2. One of them is sort of a Danny DeVito-esque smaller version of the other. And they're just very odd villains. And from there, like, it just keeps getting stranger. And as I was reading it, I was having fun with it. I love the way it looked. I love the acting of the characters. I like the slightly hyper-reality. And I like how it kept escalating. It's really possible and easy that somewhere along the line, you could get tired of them arguing, I guess. And I kept thinking I was going to get there, but I kind of didn't, because the plot just keeps moving along at this sort of really fast pace. And it's a very different book.
It's like a Tom and Jerry cartoon. I don't know. It's just, it's madcap and fun, and it's refreshing in that way. And, you know, some publishers these days looking for dark and gritty at every turn. And I like that Valiant is going for a nice range of tones.
I agree.
They have some serious stuff. They have some high concept science fiction stuff. And they've got this weird thing. And I think Tom Fowler's a perfect fit for this book. I mean, the storytelling is absolutely amazing.
And that's really where he excels. You know, like, that's his, like, storytelling he's really good at, but he does stuff that you could almost consider cartoony, but it's a lot of people would say it's cartoony, but that's not it exactly. Like, it's kind of a rubbery reality. Everything is heightened. Yeah, everything is pinned down, but it's a little just bent and a little different. And I think this is great for him. That guy needs to be on a book that has a sense of humor. And is a little bit edgy. This is actually genuinely edgy, I think. Guess what? Connor's gone, and I'm going to dial him in now. So when he comes back, he is going to sound completely different. But this is what you have to do when there's a truck that is messing up your wires. Okay, so we lost Connor, and we brought Connor back now on the phone. This is how it has to be done right now. We're patching things together. Yeah. So good news. If you couldn't tell which one Connor was before, now he's the one who sounds like shit. Okay, we're forging on with the show.
First world problems. We're good.
So the book is, it's like a Tom and Jerry cartoon. It's sort of wacky with these two brothers pounding each other with giant hammers, and now they have, They have powers that we don't quite understand yet, and they don't quite understand yet. So it's like a classic origin story. And
I like that one is big on the costume in terms of having a mask that covers his whole face, and then the other one is kind of like, I want everybody to know that I'm a superhero.
He's dressed like Robert Downey Jr. in the 80s.
Yeah. Well, I imagine him as Woody Harrelson because his name is Woody.
Okay.
And I hear Woody Harrelson in my head when I read the balloons.
In my mind, everyone is dressed like Robert Downey Jr. in the 80s.
Yeah.
Just in weird science. How you doing? How you doing? Anyway. It's very specific is what that was. And I read a lot of books this week, and it was like a 4-star week, and I actually had to think about it. But I always want to land on the side of something sort of that's new and good, and it just felt a little different. It felt a little more fresh, I suppose, than a bunch of the stuff that I was reading. And I continually find myself gravitating towards stuff that has a lighter edge. But at the same time, like, there was definitely like a social commentary going on. So I appreciate that. Like, it was fun and it was funny, but there was also a little bit of substance there in the middle of it. And it's funny because I'm curious. Like, I never read Quantum and Woody, and I don't know what the other one was like. And I kind of don't want to because, mess up sort of what I'm reading now. But it's a good book. One of the things I really like about what Valiant is doing is that they're bringing in solid talent across the board. They're not necessarily bringing in people who are superstars, but it's good creators doing lots of different kinds of stories, and the sort of, it's almost the promise of what they said the New 52 was going to be.
There are people that are superstars right now that maybe, like, they shouldn't be superstars. So I'm more interested in the great storytellers and what they can do. So this is preferable. Yeah. I like that there's this impending thing of the GOAT is coming. I know that the GOAT is imminent. And it's like Emperor Palpatine or something. There is a GOAT coming soon.
There's GOATness.
Like a Billy Goat?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And literally now, Connor, you know as much as we do about the GOAT. But they're really playing up this GOAT thing.
Tom Fowler was talking on Twitter about there being like a GOAT POV shot coming up soon. Yeah. So I'm excited about that. And I'm wondering if the eye shape of the GOAT has anything to do with it. Go ahead.
You read a bunch of these Valiant books. Is this one of your favorite ones?
This would be one of my favorite ones, yeah. Because it's fun. And there's not enough of this around. But yeah, there's a watch. There's something for everybody at Valiant Comics.
They didn't pay for that.
They did not pay for that.
Sounds like they did. Thank God they didn't sponsor this week's episode. This would just be, I don't even want to talk about it. Anyway, so let's move along. And hopefully we have no further technical difficulties. I've been shot.
Is that a technical or a medical difficulty?
I don't know. I call it a Herzog.
So the people's pick was Trillium number one from DC Comics Vertigo, Jeff Lemire's new writer-artist book. Is this a miniseries?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah, he's not going to do it after Sweet Tooth. He was in no position to do another ongoing that he writes and draws.
Right. So this was interesting. I really liked the device of it. More than I did the story. The story wasn't bad. The story was interesting, but I actually really liked the device. And the device was that it's a flip book. And if you read from one side, like for instance, I read the sci-fi side first, just purely by chance. You follow this woman in the future who is looking for this flower that will help create this antidote to this virus that's spreading throughout the universe and killing humans, no matter where they hide. And you follow her adventures, and she ends up in this, what looks like an Incan temple, on an alien world after doing some alien peyote, and opens the door and is confronted with the man with the machete, and you flip it over, and then you follow the man with the machete as he gets to that point. I really did like that a lot.
I have got to tell you what I did wrong.
What did you do wrong?
I read this digitally, and I got to the end of chapter one, and I stopped reading because it looks like the end of the issue.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh.
Huh.
Okay.
You only read half of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be the case. Because I just started looking through it. I'm like, I've never seen any of these pages. Did I actually read this?
Well, you missed the World War One side.
Yeah.
Where the British explorers go looking for this magical temple that will bestow riches and the control over life and death. And he ends up staying there as the woman walks out the door. And I love the device.
Yeah, it's a really cool device, and I think I want to know more about these characters, and I don't think I know yet. And so in a way, the device helps, but then it also, I think, having to split up the issue into two, you don't get as much story as you would have, like from one perspective, because you're dividing it into two perspectives.
I would want this to be the entire series. I like it as an introduction, like a fun way to introduce it.
My thing is, how are they going to collect this?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be like Josh had on the digital, and you just be back to back.
How was it set up physically?
It's a flipbook, so you read the one story on the one side, and then like those they've done it for Free Comic Book Day a lot, and
then
flip it over. Yeah.
Huh.
So if you read it like a regular issue, you would get to a point where suddenly the pages are upside down.
Right.
Just explaining it for anyone who didn't see the issue.
Right.
Interesting.
Just in addition to that device and that, you know, if you want to call it a gimmick or if you want to call it a technique, I think the watercolor work here is really beautiful.
It's exactly what I was going to say. This style really makes Lemire's work come alive, and I think that you're seeing a cleaner, I don't want to say a more mainstream style from him, but it's definitely a little more palatable, I think, to people who are not huge fans of his already, if that makes sense.
Well, it's really colorful. It's really saturated for watercolor. It's really vibrant. And this is, I think Jeff Lemire worked on the color with Jose Villarubia. And so I don't know how the breakdown worked exactly, but it's a really nice look for a Lemire book. And actually, now that I'm looking at it, the two sides are colored differently.
Yes.
Yeah, they are.
The World War II style is more normal. World War I style is more normal comic style. This is the sci-fi one. It's more watercolory.
The war side, it looks a lot like, it reminds me of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yes.
There's a flavor of O'Neill in there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that part looks interesting. I'm looking forward to reading the rest of this.
Well, I liked it. I didn't super love it, but I found it very intriguing and it's interesting, and we'll see where it goes. I don't want this to be the style for the entire book. Well, I guess it could work. I don't know, but it might work.
Well, I guess now that they've met, then they have their adventure together. So
yeah.
It
might be cool for bookends. Well, I don't know how this the star-crossed love story ends. So I don't want to say like they part ways and then, you know. So that could be a sad ending. But
we saw the last issue of Planet of the Apes Cataclysm. So it was number 12, and this marks the end of not just was there two miniseries before this or just one? There's two, Beneath the Planet of the Apes, Exile on the Planet of the Apes.
And then, two.
Betrayal and Exile.
Right. And that's this from Gabriel Hardman and Karina Becko. And they really, in a way that you don't see a lot, really got to stretch their legs and run with this very established property in a way that fits in very well with, you know, with how this property works. And I thought it was largely successful, but I don't think that, like, there weren't a ton of like, sort of pick of the week books. It didn't really work like that. It worked as a sort of a whole rather than and it was relatively subtle. I think actually Gabe was talking about it on Twitter the other day, and he wrote, you know, I want to thank everybody for letting us produce this downer of a book. And I was like, that's what it was. It was a huge downer.
This is the story of political intrigue, and I mean, we talked about Queen and Country that way, that it's not a book that has like these amazing single issue bursts. There's a little bit of a slow burn aspect to it, and it's this longer saga of political intrigue and religious fanaticism and atomic paranoia.
And you got nailed at the end with some hard tying into Planet of the Apes movies. I mean, like the book ends with the start of the first movie, and they're literally talking about Taylor. They're talking about Charlton Heston. You know, he's arrived.
Yeah, this issue brings you up to the beginning of the third Apes film, Escape from the Planet of the Apes.
Which is, I only own two. I own the first one, and then I don't know the order of them. But the Escape from the Planet, that's the one where these apes arrive in our world, right?
Yeah, that's where. Yeah, they go back in time, and they're in like
'70s. I saw that trailer.
Yeah.
Like at the end of, I don't know, I saw it somewhere. I guess it was at the end of the original Apes Day, and I was like, I need to see that movie.
It's this great opening because these astronauts come out of the ocean and they take off their helmets and they have ape faces.
Yeah.
And it tells you the story of Dr. Milo is sort of the secret hero of the whole franchise. And he's just like a bit part in that Escape from the Planet of the Apes movie played by Sal Mineo, mm-hmm. who is a tragic story in his own right. But I thought this was great as a big fan of the movies. This fills in a really intriguing gap in the film series story, because suddenly apes have the ability to space travel, and it kind of doesn't make sense. But the way they explained it, it makes perfect sense. And it's also all told from the point of view from Dr. Milo. And it's a great character study. I liked it a lot.
What they did here was similar to what Brian Wood is doing on his Star Wars book, which is very different than what they're doing on their Star Wars book.
True.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the sort of size of it. I like that it's been sort of a constant in our lives for a while. And I remember when they first said, you know, we're doing a Planet of the Apes book, and they were super excited about it. And I think they delivered on exactly sort of what we had in mind and kept it consistent, both art and story-wise.
Yeah.
It's great.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the runner-up, the thing that was going to be pick of the week, had I finished Trillium. No, I don't think that would have changed things. I can see the emails already. It was Superior Foes of Spider-Man number 2. I really liked the first issue, and I think that the second issue was even better.
Mm-hmm.
In that, you know, we're focusing... It's funny, Spider-Man's in the title, and it's just the biggest swindle ever. Spider-Man's got...
No, it's just the foes of Spider-Man.
I know, but come on. And you start out at the beginning, and there's the Punisher. It's like, it's all a big sort of ruse. I like that. And
someone's yelling, Spider-Man isn't in his own book anymore.
It's true. You can't get Spider-Man anywhere.
Right.
But basically, this is like the nitty-gritty of being a C-list criminal in the Marvel Universe. And it's fun, and it's funny, and it's stupid in the good way. Like
It's kind of dumb, yeah, but it's fun. And they're still trying to do that Hawkeye thing.
Yeah.
But I think they reined it in a little bit, and I think that's helpful.
I think that Steve Lieber is an excellent choice for it, because he's not going to do all the fancy tricks and stuff, but he can hit a comedy beat really well, mm-hmm. and he can draw them in such a way that, you know, it's sort of a lighter style. It's not going to look like a dark and gritty book, quote unquote.
I love that they have meetings.
Yeah, and they don't want to have meetings.
Yeah, it's like a basement meeting, and like there's one guy's like, let's just get through this. And then we can move on to other things, and we got to vote. And like they lift their masks up a little bit so they can drink or whatever. And
meetings are the same no matter where you are, what company you work for, what criminal organization it is.
Meetings
are
awful.
It's one universal truth. No one wants to be in the meeting.
I got to tell you, the thing that I like best about this book is the copious use of the silent panel.
Yeah.
It's those panels where you're watching time pass. It's a thing that you really shouldn't overuse very much, because it can get stupid. But there's just like silent facial reaction panels all over the place. I love that kind of character acting. I think it's really cool. It's a fun book.
I like that there's, you know, one female villain in the mix, and you know, there's some of the villains are hitting on her. And is she the new Beetle? Is that the...
Yeah.
I can't think of that. Okay. And yeah, and then and Shocker, who they just called Herman, just a huge coward. I love that it's, you know, the second issue, and I fully understand like the team dynamics here. And I kind of love that joke that they want to be the Sinister Six, but there's only five of them. And they're keeping that extra one as like a mystery, so it could be anybody. It's like Schrodinger's cat or something. It's great.
You know, and it's good, like, you don't need to have read anything else, but if you have, you know, if you've read Thunderbolts or whatever, all this is, there's going to be a little continuity going through there. I like that little cartoon scene. That's definitely a Hawkeye influence. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was a good book. I think you should check it out.
If you want to start your own supervillain team and have your own meetings, you're going to need a whiteboard and some of those markers that you can erase. So you're going to head on over to ifanboy.com/Amazon. Where you can buy some of that stuff in bulk. You're going to need a lot of those markers are going to get lost.
You don't want to paper print out the reports, laminate them.
Laminate them? Yeah.
Well, you're going to need a label maker.
Label maker?
Yeah.
You're going to need that little tape that goes in that label maker.
I was the weird kid who was always excited about back to school shopping. I like the stationery because I always wanted to be a writer.
I'm going to guess that all of us are right there with you.
Yeah. Like big on getting the folders and the notebooks, and I'm going to write my novel in here.
Connor, I've seen you make stationery purchases. Don't tell me that you don't like to be prepared with all the goods that you need for that kind of thing.
Oh, I like stationery purchases. I don't know if I liked them when I was 10, but much older than that, I enjoy them.
Came around to that. Yeah. Okay, well, you know what? That's fine. Yeah. You can still relate.
I matured into stationery, is what I could say. I tell people that all the time, really.
Stationery.
When I meet them, is that I'm someone who matures into stationery.
Yeah. People aren't going to know what that even is.
No.
No.
What's the deal with the bunker?
The bunker... is one of those digital.
It's about Archie Bunker.
No.
Stifling, would you? Sorry.
Was that a? Oh, okay. All right. So this is by Joshua Halfialco.
That's never happened.
And artist Joe Infernari, and it's in that widescreen format that we like on the Private Eye. So you can get it as a PDF or all those other different comic book file formats. You can also buy it on Comixology. But if you look up The Bunker, it is www.whatisthebunker.com. And they're going to try to release it monthly. And it is a gorgeous looking book. And the style, if you're not familiar with Infernari, is a lot like Gabriel Hardman crossed with Carl Kerschel. Maybe a little bit more Carl Kerschel on the black and white. And it's just a nice black and white gray wash kind of look. And it's a story about a bunch of young people in Angeles National Forest now shoveling into the earth because they found something. And it's like a Lost style, like the Hatch at the end of season one of Lost. Ooh. Spoilers, sorry. And they go into this hatch because it has their names on it. And they go inside and they find all of this evidence, like these file after file, and also a couple of personal notes for each of them, telling them that the future is going to be horrible. It's going to be this awful wasteland, and we see visuals of that. It has to do with like super viruses, and it's all because of this group of kids. And one of them ends up being the president, and he gets assassinated. And we know, but they don't know, that the person who assassinated him is, I think, if I understand the story correctly, his lover, who turns out to be the more immature kid in this group. But eventually, I guess they become, or he falls in love with this guy and ends up having to kill him because he understands that they're all responsible for what's happened. And he somehow creates the system where he can send back stuff into the past. And they've said that it's more about destiny than it is about like time travel back and forth. So it's, what do you do with this information that you've royally screwed up tomorrow? And it, all through like altruism, because one of the kids creates like this vaccine, but then because of like the way escalation works with vaccines and viruses, he creates this super virus, and that takes out a lot of the population. So they're not just like super villains, but just specific choices that they've made in their career path all leads to this cataclysm. And it's just a really cool book, and I'm excited that they're using that Private Eye model that BKV and Marcos Martín are using. And it's a good $2.
That's well worth it then.
Yeah.
Next up, you're gonna talk again more here now because it's Avengers AI number 2, and I have a natural aversion to Avengers plus whatever it is they're sticking on there usually. So if you, I'm ready for you to convince me.
Okay, this is fun. This is if you kind of miss the Runaway stuff and that you know lighthearted Marvel adventure fare, this is that. You've got Andre Araujo doing these great organic looking robots. This issue in particular had a really cool giant Kilgore Sentinel that looks a lot like the giant mechs from Neon Genesis Evangelion, which I guess I mentioned a bunch, but it's just sort of like this wild, feral-looking robot instead of a big lumbering thing. And it's just great storytelling. It's fun. It's even got a kid from the Runaways in there, that Victor guy who's technically the son of Ultron, hanging out with Hank Pym, and I think they're actually doing some really interesting things with the Hank Pym character for the first time in a while. And I love some robots, so check this out.
Connor, this was the end of Daredevil Dark Knights number 3. Well, what'd you think?
This was the end of the issue. This is issue 3, the end of the 3-issue arc from Lee Weeks. Next we're getting David Lapham doing his story.
Mm-hmm.
This, I actually really loved this arc. This was a short and sweet little throwback style Daredevil, written and drawn by Lee Weeks, who was a classic Daredevil artist back in the 90s. It was just a great little story about Daredevil trying to get a heart to a dying little girl and all the obstacles that are in his way, most notably the giant blizzard that is messing with his senses. I loved this much more than I thought I was going to love it going into it. I didn't know much about Lee Weeks as a writer, but I thought he really created a really nifty sort of beat-the-clock story where he has a hero has to get somewhere in a certain amount of time, otherwise somebody dies, and there's a lot of obstacles in the way. And I love the characterization of Daredevil. The art was fantastic. I loved everything about it.
It was fantastic. I like how it just felt like it was some comic that we found from 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It was timeless.
Yeah.
Seriously, yeah.
Actually, 20 years ago. Let's go 30 years ago.
Well, there's no big supervillain. It's just Daredevil versus the environment.
Yeah, the villain is the snow.
Just every page is just is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's like a masterclass kind of thing.
It was great. A really nice little surprise. And normally this kind of thing isn't very good, but they really stepped up and did something great. I don't even understand why this exists in the Marvel of today. I don't understand.
I don't know, other than Daredevil's popular and getting the second Daredevil book.
I guess. Fine by me.
It looks like Shocker's going to be in the next little arc.
Herman?
Yes, Herman.
Yes.
Manhattan Projects number 13. I just wanted to mention this because we haven't really talked about Manhattan Projects in a while. And this is, I guess, theoretically the start of a new arc. Don't start here. go back and read the rest. But it's great. Oh, actually, if you want to taste, if you want to see, like, how the hell did we get here? I've read all the issues and I'm still, like, working out how did we get here. But
it's true.
I love, it's Albert Einstein is creepy as hell. Actually, the thing that's so impressive about this is, you know, all these real life scientists, some more high profile than others, come together and they're each deeply disturbing in a completely different way than the last. Like each one has their own way of being creepy.
Yep.
And that's pretty interesting. But I mean, it starts off with Albert Einstein and Fenneman going through and they're taking alien carcasses from another dimension, chopping them up, and their goal is to make the Ubermensch. They're doing some eugenics. They're doing some noble eugenics. And I love it. Yeah. I will admit that it's a little creepy, but you got to embrace that creepiness because it's going to be worthwhile for the human race moving on.
I feel like you're just...
I don't think I realized how much eugenics there was in comics until Paul started doing the show on a regular basis.
It's a surprise to me, too.
Everywhere.
But yeah, they're all over the place.
It's funny because everybody seems to be upset about inherent sexism in comics, and it's really the eugenics that they're kind of sneaking through under our noses, and before we know it, they've inured us all to it. Like, we're all just like, oh, that's just eugenics. I can read a story in the newspaper that's vaguely eugenetic. and I'm like, I don't make a big deal out of it. So when they take over with the mutant sheep, I think we're going to be in trouble.
Perfect plan.
Last, I wanted to talk about the activity number 14. This is another one of those books that just sort of is been chugging along. I read it every month. I really like it. I really enjoy watching the progression of Mitch Gerads as an artist. And at the same time, I think that the Nathan Edmondson has this really specific military precision that he writes, and he's nailed that feeling more than a lot of other comic book writers that I've noticed who've tried to do military books. If it isn't authentic, it certainly feels very authentic. I thought this was a nice story because I'm finally getting a feel for who some of the characters are, and there was like a couple of unexpected twists and things like that in this one, and sort of two spies have to sort of hook up and they torture a dude, but they torture him differently than you would think. And it's a really nice character moment for the name of that one character whose name I don't remember. But besides that, it's a good, solid book. And it's definitely the best sort of military book that's on the stands right now. Thankfully, there's no supernatural twist or zombie or vampire. It's just Black Ops team.
You just wait till issue 16.
I will tear down the heavens.
I'm actually excited. I'm going to send the trades to my cousin who's in the army, and because he's very discerning about how that stuff is portrayed in stories. And it's all, you know, everything I've heard from people who have critiqued the book and do have that background, I think a lot of people are saying that it's really authentic.
Well, they take it very seriously. Yeah. You know, these guys are visiting military installations and they're talking, they're consulting, you know, with people who know this kind of stuff. And you see it, you know, as they talk about the book sort of on the social networks and things like that, you know, like they want it. Like I said, I don't know if it is authentic, but it certainly feels authentic.
It's
watching the Delta guys from Black Hawk Down. It's what this book's about. It's those dudes. And I
as long as they get the details right.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, you can have a sort of level of feigned reality, I guess, as long as it feels real. But it's even better if it is. So let us know what your cousin thinks. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I snuck back on the call.
Wow. And everyone at home breathes a sigh of relief.
I just saw my internet came back on, so I, I just joined. I hit join call, and I'm
this
back.
Is, like, what kind of Lord. Operation is this? What is?
It's this funny. Used to happen with this used to happen with regularity in year one.
But we always covered it up.
We haven't hit that crucial 400th episode yet, where we know what we're doing.
We used to record the entire show over something like this happened. Now, forget it.
We've only got a window in which to record it now.
What do the users think this week?
We like to run down the top 5 picks of the week as chosen by the user, which you can do by going to fanboy.com/comics. You can make your pull list. You can rate and review your books. And you can also designate your own pick of the week. And we like to run down the top 5 vote getters at the time of recording, which has been dicey. I'll be honest. The recording's been dicey. Here's the top 5. Before that, number 10 was Quantum and Woody, number 2 with 0.6%. So the pick of the week, or Josh's pick of the week, the iFanboy pick of the week, was ranked number 10. And number 5, Superior Foes of Spider-Man, number 2 with 2.3% of the votes. Tied with that was Green Arrow, number 23 with 2.3% of the votes. Although slightly more in the breakdown, so that's why it's 4 as opposed to 5. Number 3 was All-New X-Men 15 with 2.9% of the votes. These numbers are low. You know where I'm going with this. Number 2, The Superior Spider-Man, number 15 with 3.7% of the votes. And number 1, by a wide margin. We haven't had one of these in a while. Trillium, number 1 with 81.1% of the votes.
The wow. Snyder-Vaughn effect. Look at that. I feel like you should cut that in half because I only read half the book.
Listen, you, just because you're a dumbass.
Man, I screwed over Lemire, didn't I?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Wow, this book felt really short.
No, I counted. It, the half that I read was 15 pages.
Yeah, I think it was a super extra.
So, you know, it's not that far off from a full DC book, so it must have been extra.
All right, let's take a look at some of the individual user reviews. Holiday wrote about All-New X-Men number 15. Story, 5 out of 5. Art, 5 out of 5. Pick of the Week percentage, 2.9%. I opened this issue and immediately thought, whoa, this sucks. I'm angry. Then I read a few pages and thought, how cutesy. I'm cranky. A few pages more, Wolverine is upset. Maybe the story isn't so bad. Oh, hey, Staples, this is fun. Turn some pages, this is deep. And holy ramifications, a couple pages later, cheesy smile. Last page, my pick of the week. Whatever process Marvel has for picking fill-in artists, freaking nailed it with LaFuente. Perfect fit for another great issue by Bendis. A lot of talk this week about people being put off by the LaFuente art.
I don't understand that.
I don't understand it either. I really don't. I was like, if you're like a, you know, a super imminent fan, like, and that's all you want, like, that's weird. But I mean, LaFuente is perfect for this issue.
What's yes. funny is that imminent's not even that. I don't tend to think of him as that mainstream because
it's not that far off. Like
it isn't. And in fact, I didn't notice it. I was at the end and I was like, wait a minute, this isn't Marquez or and I looked and I was like, oh, LaFuente, that's great.
It's very close to Marquez in style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. He used to write with Bendis for Ultimate Spider-Man, very similar in tone, very teen romance-y. This was a teen romance issue. Art aside, I loved this issue because it was the classic Calm Before the Storm issue where the last big arc ended. The next big arc, which is literally the big crossover, begins next issue. And so in this issue, we just got to hang out with the cast as they dated and made out and went to the fair and people's feelings were revealed by accident. And it was the sort of the great classic, one and done story that lets you breathe a little before the next big story happens.
It felt like all the things that are great about Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to give it to Bendis is completely and utterly delivered on this series.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's been mm-hmm. really good, and I think among us, it's been overshadowed by Thor.
Yeah,
to a certain extent, but I can't believe that I'm still reading this book as happily as I am.
It was sort of like an experiment, and he was like, "I'll try out some X-Men. This looks like a good place to start." And
I'm not reading the other one; I'm reading this one. Which
I'm reading both. I'm enjoying both. But I think this is much stronger.
Good cool. stuff.
Next up, Todd Frazier, who used his real name, and
we
don't know
it.
That.
Yeah, well, that's true. Maybe that's a basketball player from the 70s. That'd be Walt Frazier. Satellite Sam number 2 gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. Pick of the Week percentage was 0.1%. The first issue was Pick of the Week, you may remember. Yep. Second installment does not disappoint, nor does it slow down the pace of this fantastic book. Both art and story are a testament to the excellent craftsman in panel storytelling. Satellite Sam is the love baby of Newsroom and Mad Men, drinking, identity issues, and live TV. What a perfect child in the hands of amazing spinsters, of fantastic, sexy, and cliffhanger drama that would make Don Draper and Roger Sterling fans of this book. This is the perfect pitch. Well done.
I think there's a very heavy murder element to it, so I think there's the Newsroom and Mad Men plus another thing that has murder in it. But I really enjoyed this a lot.
Murder, She Wrote.
Murder, She Wrote. There you go. Jessica Fletcherisms. I like this a lot. It's a very much, you know, it's a long game book. You were talking about it earlier about how, you know, like Planet of the Apes was a book, a series where not every issue is going to blow you away, but it's going to tell some of the pieces will be greater than the individual pieces. And this, I think this is what it would be with Satellite Sam.
I think this was more, it wasn't as blow you away as the first issue because that had all the production stuff that was super hype fast. And it was, you know, this had to get down to telling the story and letting us know the people. But I came out of this as like a full on, like, I totally get Howard Chaykin.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is gorgeous. This is the best art that I saw this week. I thought this was
the only problem I had, and luckily enough, they had the cast in the beginning, which
that was helpful.
More of these books needed because I often had to flip back to who is this guy? Like, is this?
It's also funny because there's like three characters, even in the character in the Dramatis persona, they look exactly the same. It's like the same guy just tilted aged, his head at a different angle.
The same guy aged five years,
like, right?
They've got the same hair and same mustache, so I had to keep going back.
Which is almost like a commentary, you know, like of the times, like all these guys looked exactly the same. Like, it's like they all did. Kind of look like a potato, and you know,
it's true. Like, it's hard to deny that, really.
I'm head over heels in love with this book. I love that it's black and white. I love that it's this crazy huge cast of characters, and they're all kind of despicable.
His little pinup girls look amazing.
Yeah.
Like his little shots in the pictures that aren't even in it, but they're so good.
Mm-hmm. It's a really good book. So you go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can rate and review your books. You can choose your own pick of the week, and you can write a user review. And if it's good, we get it on the show. Now let's do some audience questions. Now that I'm back on the show,
Connor, properly, you sound amazing.
I know.
You sound so good. People at home were like, I'm putting up with it. Now they're happy. They're happier now than they would have been if you'd been... You know, just defined the whole time. That's what
I don't know. He sounded really sexy when he was on the phone. Now he just sounds like a normal person.
Somebody's like, he sounds like that guy who calls my house.
Keith from Reno, Nevada wrote us an email. And he says,
what are you doing in the other room? Sorry.
Given the meteoric rise of writers like Jason Aaron, Jonathan Hickman, and Rick Remender at Marvel, and to a lesser degree, Scott Snyder, DC, I would say lesser degree. He pretty much meteorically rose.
His rankings are a little off, but the question has valid.
Okay. Why do some writers seem eternally relegated to the B-list? Writers like Greg Pak, Jeff Parker, and Fred Van Lente are, or at least were, producing some of the best books around with stuff like Red She-Hulk, Dark Avengers, and Hercules. However, they never seem to be brought up to the major titles. Are they simply not pitching higher-profile work? Are the low sales of some of their works held against them? Is their lighthearted style viewed as incompatible with top-tier books? Greg Pak is now on one of the top-selling books at DC.
And
he's been taking over Action Comics. So.
Up until recently, he has sort of been in the sort of like the mid-pack book.
No, and I think he never would have broken out of the mid-pack at Marvel because Marvel's so top-heavy with writers. But now he's over at DC, and he's been given two of the top five books they've got.
It's interesting because there are a lot of factors at play, I think, that people don't necessarily think about.
There's also a lot of speculation in the same thing.
There is, and I will be speculating some, but some of it will be uncorroborated things I know or think I know. But, you know, one of the things really it has to do with sales more than anything else. If you take one of those mid-tier books and you turn it into a big seller, like Rick Remender did with Uncanny X-Force, they're going to look at you differently. Jeff Parker is literally one of my favorite writers in comics, but he does a certain tone of book that for some reason doesn't appeal to
the
giant audience. Yeah. Which, by the way, I am not the giant. I don't like the same thing they do.
We love him. We talked to him about a while how we'd love if he went over to. He should join Pack over there and do a Superman.
He should. At the same time, by the way, Scott Snyder is bigger than all those guys. He's sort of equal with Hickman and Aaron, and Remender's really only stepped up to that level sort of recently. And then Bendis is above all, you know, all of the, in sort of
well, sales wise, Snyder's got two of the top five books in all of comics, so he'd be probably on top of the list.
He's a big deal. So and you know, the reason he got there was because his you know, his book sold, and they gave him a chance with that stuff, and he was somebody exciting that they have. So it's a little of everything, but it's a mix of what they think they can sell, and you know, what they think they can sell on a name, and at Marvel, that shit is entrenched. Like they've got
so many of those guys.
They've got their quote unquote architects, although I think they've abandoned that. But that was basically their way of saying these are the people who are going to handle all this stuff. And there's sort of horse racing and trading that goes on in between there. And some people sort of move into favor and move out. But it's been pretty steady for a long time. You know, Bendis is at the head of that table. And then, you know, Hickman is right behind him, and Jason Aaron now. And, You know, that's the way it
Fraction,
is.
Fraction, Remender, yeah. All those guys. Yeah.
Until something, and then Slott with his Spider-Man kingdom.
Yeah.
And then, and that's doesn't, it's not going to change unless something changes, basically. And then there's all sorts of other stuff going on that have to do with politics and things that you don't know, and snubs and like stuff that you have no idea that would make some people angry. Well, we're not hiring that guy anymore.
They have a big Stannis Baratheon table.
Yes.
With little fiefdoms in it. And then they also have a Battlestar Galactica table where they push around the pawns and stuff. With
what I've heard is that when you go in for a meeting with an editor, they immediately ask you how you feel about eugenics. And if you answer incorrectly, you go off the table.
But what is correctly and what is incorrectly?
That is the question, isn't it?
The power to give that information out.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a good idea. Yeah, it's money.
So there's a lot. There's just a lot of things. There's a lot of reasons why.
Okay, Neil Gaiman writes. Well, it could be.
Hello.
It's or just Neil. So I recently got laid off of work.
It's funnier now that it's Neil Gaiman.
It's not funny at all for Neil, but
no, it isn't. But I'm sure
it can also be fun if you move the punctuation around this end. So I recently got laid off of work, which sucks because now I have to limit my comic book spending. I'm reading so many book. So many good titles. Yeah, I'm having a problem.
There are no commas.
Thing is, I'm reading so many good titles. It's hard to drop any one or two books. I'm reading Saga, All New X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, X-Men, Jupiter's Legacy, The Wake, Batman, Daredevil, Bloodshot, Exo Man of War, Archer and Armstrong, etc. My question to you guys is, have you been faced with a similar situation where you guys got laid off or fired from previous jobs and had to cut a few good books out of your pull list? Personally, it's heartbreaking to drop the books I'm reading.
No.
Well, I've been laid off twice in my life. Neither time I really had to do that.
Yeah, but the thing that's important here to remember is that, okay, let's say it's 2008 and Connor and I decide to take a massive pay cut to do something that you guys who are listening may be familiar with. In our unique instance, we would have normally had to cut books, but it happened that was right about when we started getting them for free,
right?
Which was helpful. The point is, yes, totally understand. It's a tough economy. Books keep getting more expensive, and sometimes it's hard to justify that. You're spending $3 or $4 for what equates to a few minutes of entertainment, and if you've got a family or whatever. It's totally a thing, and there's all sorts of things that you can do. One is to drop books. Another is to look at sort of doing it differently than you're doing now. They still don't do the price drops.
The DC does, but they push them back a month, so now it's 2 months after release. Marvel doesn't do them at all for digital. We're talking about digitally.
DC books.
You can go to DCBS and order them that. No, he's got Batman and The Wake on there.
Oh yeah.
You can go to DCBS and order your books online. I think they do like 40% off the cover price. I mean, there's things you can do rather than go to your store every Wednesday and pay full cover price and that kind of thing.
Our own Jeff Reed is like 6 or 7 or 8 months behind everyone else, is still having a blast because he's just doing it at his own time. And so it's like our relationship is sort of like the lake house. he's living 8 months and then he gets to comment on those. And
which one of you is Keanu Reeves?
We both are.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Eugenics.
So no, it sucks, Neil, and I'm sorry. When I got laid off this first time when I was 22 and wasn't doing iFanboy full time like we were the second time, I just kept buying them and just ran up credit card debt, which took me a long time to pay off. So I don't suggest doing that.
No, it's true. And it's important to remember, like, this stuff's all going to be here, and in the future it'll be cheaper. So it's not necessarily worth it to, stay current if it's going to break you. But there's a way to get comics. That sounds like I'm telling you to steal them. I'm not, but there's different ways to make it more affordable. If you want to read stuff right away and stay with it, there's some things that you can do that with.
Trade weight and get them off Amazon.
Yeah, some of that Image stuff. Those are minis. That's fine. Wait on that. Those first trades come out. They're $10 for, 5-6 issues. That's always, a good deal.
I found that it's apparently harder to trade weight on Marvel stuff because there's a smaller issue count in some of those hardcovers, and they're kind of expensive.
Yeah.
So look at that. Look at what the price is now, and maybe look at what the price is going to be in the collection and figure out if there's something that makes more sense to be buying an issue than to buying in collection and the other way around.
Yeah. Sell some stuff. Fund your comics for a month. You know? Set aside a different bit of money for that. It sucks, and we're sorry. That really is that is no fun. And here we are going to spoil the books for you every week.
You could take a lesson from Phil Connors, and what you do is you go to a small Pennsylvania town, and you hang out there for like 1,000 days, scope out the way they deliver the money to the banks, and grab a bag. Just grab one.
I was like, "What the? What is he? Oh, wait. Okay, no. All right."
So
I was like, "Is Phil Connors a baseball player?"
Just do that,
Ned. Ned Punch. Ryerson.
You can email us at contact@fanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. In both instances, tell us your name and where you're from. It's always more fun. And if you are Neil Gaiman, then you should have saved some of that Sandman money.
Boy, he just...
Talk to your editors. You should be able to get some comps.
I feel like someone will pay you to write something.
Yeah.
Anyway. Paul, we got some shows coming out?
We had some shows. Well, we did a special edition on the Justice League Flashpoint Paradox movie. Made some people mad.
Heard that was fiery.
Yeah.
What happens. I go on vacation and everything falls apart.
Neesman brought the fire. So there's that. And then there's also the Wolverine, which we liked more than we didn't.
Even without a jacket.
Even without a jacket.
Yeah. I gotta tell you.
Wait a minute. I haven't seen it yet. Don't spoil the jacket for me.
There's no jacket, okay? You don't need to go in there thinking there's going to be a jacket.
I was like, I know there's going to be like a mid-credit sequence. Maybe that's going to be the jacket. No, it's some other thing.
It should have been. I know that much.
But thanks to my friend Dave and Brett for joining us on that show and filling in because nobody wanted to go see the Wolverine.
Because Connor and I couldn't be bothered.
Right.
No, I was on vacation. No, I would definitely have gone to see it.
I look forward to your thoughts on that one, though.
Next, we have coming up Kick-Ass 2 next week, and I think we'll probably have another show on that.
Oh, well,
stay tuned.
I can't do it.
I love the first one. That one is one of my favorite.
I know, but I couldn't even read the book after that.
Pass.
Yeah. We'll see.
Do it by yourself. Oh, my God, I want to listen to that.
Maybe I will.
I was almost going to do that with the Wolverine.
I wish you had.
Do voices. It's all right. It's all right.
Wow.
You were the only person in your 20s making Wences references.
Two things are at play here. One, it's really hot in the Northeast where Josh and Paul are, and they're both going slowly crazy. Two, I've been holding microphones, phones, earbuds, running around trying to find signal in my apartment, and so we're all fed up.
It's great if you cut off now.
You have pants on? That's a great gag for the end that we blew.
Did you hear that pause where I looked down? That's because I didn't know for sure. That's where I'm at today. So in the meantime, go to fanboy.com where you can read Josh's Pick of the Week review and more in-depth comic book discussion. All the important news and discussion topics are happening. You got opinion columns that make people angry, all kinds of things that are happening at fanboy.com. And you can follow our social network links by going to fanboy.com/about and finding our staff listings where everybody's social network links are there. And you can follow us on twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy. There's a really weird noise happening somewhere outside that I don't know what it is.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com and please do and send us in some stuff for the episode 400 show. We're going to read a bunch of your emails. Yeah, so
let's circle back to that. So this is episode what? 398? So yeah. 2 weeks is episode 400.
So three or four of you send in some decent emails we can use next week and don't put 400 in the subject
that's
line.
That's an issue.
And then the rest of you send in, you know, and yeah.
Put 400 in the subject line. That way we know you went for episode 400. We're going to do those on the show, an extra long email show. So send those in to celebrate the 400th episode. And there's been a bunch of good ones. A couple of obnoxious ones.
You can send in duplicates if you want.
So
I like how all the walls are down.
Par for the course.
Some of you were irritating. There it is. If you like us, you could.
Sorry. And also, if you want to leave a voicemail, that's 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 326-2697 with any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, etc. But save those good questions for the emails because the thing we just talked about.
Right. That's true. Regardless of the fact that we find some of you obnoxious, and I'm sure some of you find some of us obnoxious, so it's, you know, zero sum game. You could write us a review on iTunes. You could go over there and mark down in the box and check the 5 stars or the 2 stars, whatever star you think is appropriate for us. I mean, this week, 2.5, maybe. Let's be honest.
Let's be generous.
2.5. Can't get their shit together technically. seem to have resentment for each other and audience.
And the weather and the desk. And one of them wasn't wearing pants, and I found that discomforting.
Sexier phone voice than regular voice.
I don't know what happened there.
Should always do show with phone.
It's so humid. Or you can tell your friends about the podcast, about the website.
Edit points obvious.
Yeah. I want to be one of those shows that said, make sure you cut that out, and then don't. Actually, no.
No, you don't want to do that again.
I know. We actually don't. It's fine. I was listening to something today, and it was like, so we'll edit that out, and they didn't.
See, what happened here is that we've gone from 2.5 now to 1.5 just with that last 10 seconds.
Oh, the laughter carried us over.
The man behind the curtain is waving glow sticks and blowing into a kazoo.
The man behind the curtain's at a rave?
That's rave music in my head, apparently. Somebody sample that and turn it into a... There we go. Anyway, if you tell other people about the show, however you do it, we really appreciate it. There you go. Done.
Oh boy. Well, next week Josh will be gone on vacation.
I'm clearly gone right now.
Mysterious new co-host, and then we'll all be back, three of us, for episode 402 weeks. So don't forget to send those emails in. Until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Josh. Didn't make it at all.
8 years.
Look me in the eye and tell me you don't find me attractive. Look me in the heart. Look me in the eye and promise no love is like our love. Look me in the heart and I'm break broken. It won't happen. It's unbelievable. Place the same always. Can you be real in me and be strong and fun? It's a good goal. It's a good goal.
Can you guys hear the fan that's on in here?
No.
Thank God, because if I shut it off, I'll die.
I guess the temperate weather didn't last.
We had like 2 or 3 weeks of it.
It's muggy as hell here.
Not, yeah, it's just been raining all day. So as soon as the rain stops and it stops.
I just leaned onto my desk with my elbows and I'm attached to my desk.
Gross.
Gross.